Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Hello and welcome to episode 9 of the Succession Recap podcast. This one, oh my God, what can I say? Blood sacrifice. It's all happening. I am Felix Salmon of Axios. I'm here with Emily Peck of HuffPost, although technically I'm not here. I'm in California. Emily is in the studio with Emily, since you're in the studio, why don't you introduce our amazing guests for this episode?
Well, Felix, I'm here with the amazing Lizzie O'Leary, who is new to Slate and about to start a whole other podcast here.
Woo!
And formerly of Marketplace.
Marketplace, Bloomberg, other places.
And Lizzie has brought her husband.
I have brought my husband.
Who she will introduce.
I've brought John Collins of Elevator Repair Service, noted theater director.
Hello, John.
And Succession fan.
So, John, you were just explaining that we have, what is it, two Romans, a Logan and a Marcia?
No, Tom. I'm Tom.
A Tom.
He's a Tom.
We have all taken the BuzzFeed quiz.
We've all taken the BuzzFeed quiz. I turned out to be Roman. Who are you, Emily?
I too, Felix, am Roman.
Wow, we can't have two Romans hosting
Fuck
this.
Fuck off!
So, Jasmine, disconnect Felix, quick.
I'm a Logan.
Get out.
But Lizzie is Logan.
Lizzie is, of course, a Logan.
I don't know whether to be insulted or flattered.
Not surprised.
I did promise Lizzie when I invited her on the show that I would make it clear to every single listener that she in no way, no how, not in the slightest bit resembles Siobhan. She is a Logan.
She does.
Emily's saying I do. John?
She does a Logan.
You have red hair.
Ish.
There are worse people to resemble.
Yeah. It was one of our honeymoon pictures that on Instagram, Felix commented, "Hi, Shiv," at the bottom.
That was for some other reason, though, I think.
We were in a hot tub drinking champagne.
You guys, can we talk about this episode? Because there's a lot to get into. Roman... maybe dying. We don't know. He's being held hostage, for starters.
Although right there at the end, he got called into the other room by name. And maybe this is just an elaborate way this deal is being worked out.
Maybe.
Well, I think there's more to it than the deal, but they are definitely... The one thing that really struck me about this episode is that all three of the kids turn out to be unbelievably actually competent for once.
Yes, I had the same exact thought. Like, I've never
seen
Roman being just so good at doing anything.
Roman rises to the occasion. Roman, like, underneath his, you know, what did Shiv call him? A toddler with a hard-on? Exterior. There's that amazing piece, which I missed. I actually watched this episode twice. And I missed it the first time. I picked it up the second time when... Jamie, the banker, and Roman in the back of the car going to the meeting, and Jamie's like, "You want me to give you 20 of my best minutes on Turco-Azerbaijani relations?" And Roman's like, "I know it all. I'm like actually,
and he
up.
Actually
like,
does
the oil
he
pipeline cooperation, the military and diplomatic links, or the deeper cultural sympathies? He's like, he knows his he's well briefed. He's on top of it. Like, maybe the fuck up, cut up act is just an act, and actually he knows what he's doing. I mean,
well, you know, I think why he displayed such competence, it's because he had just a little bit of love and support from his father, who actually took him aside and was like, "You can do this."
He was also
and that's
terrified.
All these kids need. They just need a parent to be like, "You are good. I love you, and you can do this."
Oh,
I mean, say
so
I love you, but
much more. I don't know. You have more faith than I do. I like sarcastically wrote, "Why is Roman on the upswing? It's not at all clear to me that he has the stuff."
I don't know if he has. How much stuff do you actually
need?
Well,
I mean,
need?
We don't know. We don't know that he has the stuff. But this has definitely been a part of, I want to say, the past four episodes of the season is Roman actually becoming a serious player in the way that he wasn't for the first 1.5 seasons, basically.
Logan keeps teasing that, like, goes to him. Was it this episode where he told him, he's like, "No, you're really smart. Yeah. You can do this."
Yeah.
But Roman was terrified.
And Rhea told Logan.
Yeah.
Rhea was saying nice things about Roman to Logan.
Right.
Like, Jerry doesn't seem to completely just laugh at him. there is this idea that, and it's new, I think, in the second half of this season that he's competent. But they are all performing under pressure when their backs are against the wall and there's an existential threat to Waystar Royko. Roman, like, does exactly what he's meant to do. Shiv does exactly what she's meant to do. Kendall does exactly what he's meant to do. It's kind of amazing.
And I thought it was also remarkable that in the hostage situation, I thought Roman was, like, pretty remarkably chill.
He was pretty chill.
I mean, because there was the other guy.
With his chin in his chest where it was always
it,
is.
Was it Carl?
Carl
was like,
just like losing it.
I FYI, I'm having a bit of a panic attack. And, you know, and his hand, as soon as they asked if there are foreign nationals, his hand was already in the air even before they discussed whether they disclose it or not.
I am currently having a panic attack.
So, can I just say, you guys remember 2 years ago when the 30 Saudi businessmen?
Yes, exactly. This was the parallel.
This was the parallel, yes.
We're locked up in the Ritz-Carlton
in Riyadh. Yes.
As part of an anti-corruption drive.
Right. I was Googling this as we were. I was like, oh, I know what this is.
I thought there were, the parallels. I said there were parallels to the Saudis and MBS a few episodes ago when we first met that guy. And now it seems like incredibly obvious that this parallel is there.
Yeah, I mean, when there was this one reference to Baku, and you're like, oh, he's not Saudi, he's Azerbaijani. That's weird. Right. But he always felt Saudi, and now they're just upping the Saudi parallels here, even unto the anti-corruption campaign, which ultimately was an attempt by MBS to consolidate power and to bring assets under his own grip. And if that's what's happening here in the show, again, if he's wanting to consolidate assets, one of the assets he'd love to consolidate would be Waystar Royko. So the deal could well be on. Roman can still be the hero.
Well, except that the guy who Roman's... Edward, is Edward the princeling to bet on? Or is somebody else... Didn't he say, like, his cousin was doing that? Like, I'm wondering if maybe they bet on the wrong horse. Like, the person
who's seizing
power.
What happened was that Edward brought in the deal flow. He was going to do it for his dad, and now it's his brother-in-law, sister, or someone. But, like, the deal is still happening, even if it's not Edward as the principal anymore.
You definitely want to do a deal with people who have guns and lock you in a hotel. That seems like way better than going to Congress.
A string of subplots around this deal for the next season.
Yeah. So should we get to the main event?
For the next season? You don't think that's going to get sewn up, like, by the end of...
or the next episode.
We don't know. Listeners,
I mean, one thing about Succession is it moves fast. Everything that you think is going to take a season to resolve winds up resolving in like an episode or two. That was the great thing about season one, right? The whole thing was like, was Logan going to recover? And then he does. And you're like, oh, well, that whole thing, which was meant to drive the whole season, is going to have to get replaced by something else. And it was.
True.
A season in every episode.
So let's talk about the hearings. Can we talk about the hearings?
Well, okay, I just want to ask John one question, though.
Okay.
I don't know if you noticed this. At the beginning of the episode, it said, written by Jesse Armstrong.
Oh, yeah.
I've never seen that. I mean, I might not have noticed it before, but it's certainly the first time I've seen it. The showrunner wrote this episode? What does that mean?
It usually means it's going to be a significant episode. I mean, you know, it's like when Matt Wiener would write a Mad Men episode.
I mean, they crammed a lot into this baby. I mean, the Roman thing was just a subplot, and the main thing was the DC hearings. Right. But even that wasn't the whole thing, right?
Well, one thing John said last night, which hopefully will be a nice segue for us. One thing John said when we were watching this was that this was a much more procedural episode in a lot of ways. Like a lot of stuff happened versus a psychological chess game.
Mm-hmm. Right. This was more Law and Order than the usual, you know, psychodrama.
Given how like the Iannucci DNA is sort of part of what Jesse Armstrong does, I was surprised how few like really comic moments there were. This was not Succession as comedy at all.
That's right. It was harder. There were not as many best line choices this time around. Right.
I mean, we had Tom Wamsgans practically in tears after his really bad, what does he have, two assholes now, testimony before Congress.
Not to
like to be married
Greg.
To a man with two assholes.
Oh my God. Can we just talk about that?
Line.
I mean, that's like a reporter's dream, because you watch these hearings as a reporter and you just want to like shoot yourself in the face. But the questioning of Tom Wamsgans before this committee was incredible.
I have a big issue with this, though. Okay. And we didn't talk about
this. But wait, hang on a second. If we're talking about good lines, can we just mention a smirking block of domestic feta?
Yes. I didn't manage to scribble that one down, but I remember it. No, my issue with it was that, and it's all about Tom's poor performance, and since I'm speaking as Tom today, how in the world were they surprised by all of that? How was Jerry not involved in all those emails being subpoenaed? Like, how all of a sudden does Congress have all that information and they have no idea they got it from them?
That was a bit of a MacGuffin, too. I didn't understand how they had the emails. And I'm not familiar with, maybe Felix, you would be, but other hearings where, you know, CEOs and whatnot, executives are brought forward and they have that level of detail. Like, box X number is missing from the file.
And they had Greg's name on a log.
They had some of that. Felix, do you remember the Carl Levin Goldman Sachs hearings where they referred to like very specific mortgage tranches? Like that was something where I felt like that was one where they're like, well, you called, I can't even now remember the names of the collateralized debt, but they had these like very specific names for them and they were calling up internal emails about how like this thing was a piece of shit.
Right. No, you can I mean, the Senate committees definitely have subpoena power and they can definitely subpoena these kind of emails. I think there was a little bit of artistic license in terms of the amount of time it takes to
subpoena
all these emails and go through them. And I think that John is exactly right that whole process of discovery is done with full visibility by Jerry and everyone else, and they know exactly what Gil has. So the idea that Gil is going to ambush Tom with these emails is unlikely. But then again, Tom didn't look like he was surprised that Gil had the emails. He just looked like he had no idea how to answer the question.
I mean, he looked a little
if you're an executive going in front of Congress, you shouldn't be surprised. That means
first
your team
he denied knowing who Greg is and then had to revise that. I mean, it was classic Tom stuttering.
You can't make an omelet without making some
Greggs. A
tomlet without breaking some Greggs.
You sent that email to him, what, like 85 times?
67 times. I mean, oh my God.
Do you know what is special about the hours between 3 a.m. and 5 a.m. on the night of March 12th?
No, sir.
That was the only two-hour period in which you did not send an email to Mr. Hirsch with the title, "You can't make a tomlet without breaking some Greggs." You sent the same email to him 67 times in one evening.
I guess it was a joke.
Right.
They were supposed to be destroying evidence together, top secret, and he's emailing 67 times, presumably about that? That was
I have to say, I thought that the few pages that Greg grabbed out of the fire pit were going to come into this episode. I thought that was going to have some play.
I think that comes when, okay, so this is my theory, that the blood sacrifice is Tom and Greg, and that after being sacrificed by the Roy family, Greg winds up squealing to the feds, handing over his few pages of paper, and, you know, being a cooperating witness. That is, and that's where that whole subplot and the audio recordings and everything else.
I strongly disagree.
We're all shaking our heads.
Well, look, I strongly disagree about who the blood sacrifice.
I think the idea of Greg somehow turning that way is. I bet that's right.
But I think Greg wants those for the money, so he can go to Logan.
I don't think that last line, that blood sacrifice line, the way he said it, could. I mean, it takes some weight away from it if he's talking about Tom.
He's talking about Kendall. 100%, because he says to Shiv, he said, "Ken, I forget what he, I didn't write it down, but like Kendall came out like a fighter, but that's not going to be enough for these vegetarians
on
the board."
We watched that about three times.
Yeah, I mean, I really think he's setting Kendall up. I mean, he threw to him in the hearing to sell him out, which fine. And then he made that comment to Shiv, and then very close to that comment mentions blood sacrifice, and the whole arc of the season has kind of been Kendall-y. Like at the beginning, Kendall. I mean, the hearing was really like a comeback for Kendall from doing that sort of disastrous appearance on TV in the
My
first
dad's
episode.
Plan was better.
Yes, exactly. Where he's like dripping wet from the spa, and they shuttle him off. He really like does a comeback, but I feel like he's not going to end on the up. Like he is the blood sacrifice, and Logan
and he can't fight
already.
Back. He's completely, you know,
he's compromised.
Yeah.
He is compromat in a way that what's his name, Bill, who they want to kill, cannot be killed because he has the compromat. He says,
totally.
"I have it all in my diary.
Exactly.
I should write a book."
Yeah.
So like he takes himself out of it, and I feel like we've set up Kendall for a fall. But I don't know.
Kendall's blood.
He is blood.
Tom's not blood.
No.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
There are two things. These are tiny details, but that I loved that are at the top of the episode that sort of set up, I don't know, the research that I feel like the Succession team does. Number one is the like faux 60 Minutes interview. And they aped the 60 Minutes shot style. They aped the talking nose, like right down to these very tight, you know, specifically lit 60 Minute shots. And then the other thing, and I think it's when they're watching the 60 Minutes, the faux 60 Minutes, is Carolina, that's her name.
Carolina.
Her tweet deck flying by.
Yes, the tweet deck.
I
was like, oh my God, she's seeing
deck.
How it's landing.
Yeah.
They had a couple of tweet deck shots in the hearing room, in the back room. Someone else had tweet deck up too. Might have been Carolina
but
I was like, that is so accurate. Yes. Oh. Mr. Fuck.
Yeah,
is going
and
to
that
Washington.
Whole thing where that, I mean, I saw out of the corner of my eye how they did that establishing shot of him walking through the Union Square Green Market, because that's what, like, normal, you know, I don't know, organic biodynamic people do or something. it makes him feel more trustworthy that he's in a green market, but that's so, you know, TV.
Should we talk a little bit about what went down on the cruise ships? Or are we all in agreement of what went down, basically?
Well,
a bunch of sexual harassment and people jumping overboard?
Well, we know about Lester threatening the performers with their jobs unless they have sex with him. And there were references to bodies overboard. And what was the acronym?
And
not
incident,
real,
no real person
no
involved.
Real
no
person
real
involved.
Person involved.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like that was like of a larger significance because to the Roys, there are no real people unless it's maybe family.
Maybe family. Like
maybe
there
just
are some
Logan.
Incidentals, but
no real person involved.
No real person involved was just like, oh.
And do we buy Shiv's convincing the witness not to?
Yeah, let's dig into Shiv.
That was an impressive performance by Shiv, because it came after an equally impressive performance by Rhea. Like, there was that thing where she just kind of waltzes into the apartment. She goes, as I understand it, we have nothing to be guilty about. Oh, I look forward to getting more involved. Toodle pip. And then
toodle
leaves.
Pip.
Yeah.
Toodle pip. And then that's like, she's like, I can say the words in a vaguely convincing manner. And then Shiv comes out and does an actual act of turning someone around and being convincing in a way that Rhea's probably, I don't know, maybe she can do it, but maybe she couldn't. Maybe
she didn't want to get her hands dirty.
Well,
like
and
that.
She's also not kind of internally broken about it in the way that I think Shiv is. Or I don't. I watched this having just finished She Said, Jodi Kantor and Megan Toohey's book about, you know, breaking on the Harvey Weinstein stuff, and the whole section about Christine Blasey Ford. And there are two things that totally stuck out to me. One, there's this like random throwaway line, Jerry mentioning NDAs. And it was like,
the NDAs start dominoing.
The NDAs start dominoing. I was like, oh my God, how many NDAs are there in the Roy world that we don't know about? And how many secret settlements? And then this like devastating line of Shiv's, that's all you'll ever be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's both accurate and not and cruel. And all I could think about is just like the competing impulses that are going on in this woman's mind. I mean, Shiv's job is
but let's
masterful.
Unpack this.
I actually thought the hearings too had an echo
a little
to
bit
the,
because
oh, just
to
shouting
the Kavanaugh,
over the women. Okay, Felix.
To the Kavanaugh hearings, because it was very much like part one and part two. And if you remember the Kavanaugh hearings after part one, everyone was like, Christine Blasey Ford was so great. Kavanaugh's going down, blah, blah, blah. And after part one of the hearing, it was like, oh my God, Waste Star Royko is going down. Then the second part, it was very eerily similar to Kavanaugh, where Kendall comes out and he just pushes back and he's super aggressive
good.
And fights.
That's
and
good.
it kind of like
and then
reminds
you have the Republican
me
senator who's like, yes.
Yes, exactly. And he turns it around with just like naked aggression and attack. And I don't know, maybe that's a common thing. If I ever get called up before a
with
hearing,
a fist pump from Connor.
Yes.
In the third row.
Yes. But what were you going to say, Felix?
So, yeah, I think Lizzie is exactly right. And the other big thing, which was just pure coincidence, and there's no way that the writers could ever have known about this, was that it came out, this episode came out the same week as Irene Carmone's piece in New York Magazine about like the way that the women of the Me Too movement have suffered in exactly the way that Shiv said that she was going to suffer. But the NDA's dominoing, I think, is super interesting. And I want to know more, Lizzie, from you about how that works. The way I see it is that what happens in theory is that this woman comes out in public and says very much in public, dear Waste Star Royko, can you waive my NDA so that I can talk about all of this in public? And they have to say yes, because to say no would be suicidal. And then once they waive that one, they feel the need to waive all of the other ones, and then all of the other ones start coming out. Is that, am I right about that?
I don't know about the sort of waive the NDA part of it. I mean,
they're just breaking them.
They're just, yeah. I mean, that was one of the things that is in She Said, is the sort of these women wrestling with, if I break my NDA, like, am I going to be liable for millions of dollars? Is the Weinstein Company going to come after me? Probably, yeah. They have some big, scary lawyers. I mean, I would assume you know,
well,
Rape
I think
Star Shitco also
there's a Murdoch parallel here, of course, which is the Roger Ailes investigation.
Yeah.
Where the women started coming out and making accusations about Roger Ailes, and they were all under NDAs. And then 21st Century Fox came out and said, we are basically releasing you from your NDAs
for the purposes
of this investigation.
With Weinstein, I think it was more like once the women started talking, the Weinstein Company just didn't go out. They didn't pursue.
They didn't go after. But there's this whole section in the book where they really go into, and I can't remember which woman it was. There are two women in England. I don't know if it's Zelda Perkins or if it's Laura Madden, I think her name is. And it's like a very specific question of like, will I be liable for all this money? Mm-hmm. Will they go after me? Mm-hmm. And when she breaks it.
But in those cases,
and then in the end, Weinstein, they go bankrupt and it's like moot. Whatever.
But there's somebody to take the fall there. That's a company distancing itself from, I mean, I don't know, Roger Ailes is not some insignificant employee, but in this case, it's the whole company has something at stake. They're trying to figure out who they can distance themselves from, but they can't figure out who to do that. So that's why
blood sacrifice
blood
is necessary.
Sacrifice. Mm-hmm.
the buck stops with Bill, but no, it does not.
It does not.
It needs to stop a little higher up.
Can't kill Bill.
I also thought one of the...
that was their joke.
One of the good real-life parallels to these hearings was the hacking scandal that News Corp went through a few years ago. And if you'll remember, Rupert Murdoch and his son James appeared before Parliament. And that's famous because Murdoch got a pie in the face.
And Wendy Deng like jumped in
there. Yeah, and Wendy Deng, his wife, jumped in and took the pie for him. So that was like really got all the attention. But also what happened was Murdoch looked kind of like old when he testified. And it was kind of like the beginning of the end, I think, for people would agree, for News Corp. And also for his son, James, who like never really his big deal that he was shepherding through the B deal kind of fell through after those hearings. You'll remember the News of the World, the tabloid was hacking into like everybody's voicemails to like figure out what was going on. And News Corp never really recovered from that. And I feel like that's a big parallel.
They shut down the entire paper.
They shut down the whole paper. Right. Yeah. And someone went to jail. I forget. I was reading about it the other night. But
Andy Coulson, was it?
Andy Coulson and Rebecca Brooks.
Yeah, Rebecca Brooks.
Rebecca never went to jail.
She didn't go to jail. It was bad. It was really bad for them. And I feel like that's the parallel here. Because I thought about Ailes too, but this is kind of a more like company behaving badly rather than man behaving badly inside the company and being protected. Although that is part of it. Right. It's kind of like a mishmash, I guess.
So I have a question about Logan in the hearings. He kind of falters and dodders for a moment. Was that real? Was that him playing Kendall? What was happening there?
See, I think this has been going on a lot.
I think that was the low blood sugar thing. And wait, who is the PR guy who seems
Hugo,
to have become
right?
suddenly
Fisher
a thing?
Stevens?
Hugo.
Fisher Stevens.
Is that his real name?
Yeah.
It is Fisher Stevens. Where Jerry's like, yay, low blood sugar, and Hugo goes, can you give him a chocolate suppository? Just slip a Snickers bar up there?
One last time, just in case, they're super direct. Did you, Logan Roy, witness any assaults on your ships or take part in them?
I'm not going to answer a fucking question like that.
I thought that's just a no.
I'm not dignifying that fucking question with an answer. You can both fuck off.
Okay.
Is he okay?
Low blood sugar.
Can you give him a chocolate suppository? Just a slip a Snickers bar up there.
But this is a thing about that kind of behavior from Logan. There's been a little bit more of that in the last three episodes or so where he gets a little confused or he gets a little soft. Like he got real soft with Shiv a couple of times. One time right before he turned on her about the putting herself up for CEO of Pierce. And I wonder if some of this isn't some calculated scheming on his part or part of how he was setting it up to throw it to Kendall. Or
I have two thoughts. One is like, it seemed put on to me a little bit just because prior to acting all doddering and stuff, he was like quipping back towards the congressman, right?
Yeah.
They said, oh, well, I'm not going to compare to Emerson, blah, blah, blah. He said some great line. So it did seem kind of like he switched from being kind of sharp and with it to doddering, possibly on purpose. But then the other thing I was going to say that moves to the doddering camp is the opening scene of the episode where he's walking slowly in Central Park like an old man.
Mm-hmm.
He just looks like such an old man taking his like constitutional. And then he comes out of the elevator and it's like dim and the elevator opens and the bright light hits him in the face. And he's just like squinting and looking away. And he seems like he's really feeling his age.
I guess I'm just afraid to not always suspect that he's up to something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Like Shiv said to the woman, I don't trust my father.
Right, right. Which was, of course, like the thing that made her believable, I guess, on the part of the woman.
She was telling the truth.
Right, or some version of the truth.
But
yeah.
Still in a manipulative way.
The way to persuade someone is, to successfully manipulate them is to tell the truth. You're much more likely to do that than you are if you lie to them.
Yeah, these people are pros.
I have a obsession that kind of runs through my watching of Succession, and it happens in the scene where Shiv is trying to persuade the woman whose name I've forgotten. That's really sad that now we're all just calling her the
victim.
Woman. Victim. Right. That's all you'll ever
name.
Be.
Sorry.
Is the weaponization of the phrase, uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh gets used a lot in Succession. The woman uses it when she's kind of disbelieving and listening to Shiv. Shiv uses it in her like, uh-huh.
Logan uses it all the time.
I'm getting there.
Okay.
in her, Shiv's like, uh-huh. And then Logan's like, uh-huh, is his real signal of like, you're a piece of shit and I'm not listening to you.
That's true. That's right up there with all due respect, which gets used a lot in the show as well. Yeah. All due respect and then some awful insults right after.
No one respects anyone in this show.
Hello, I'm Imi Harper. On the Slow Newscast from Tortoise, I tell the story of how a Hong Kong billionaire was silenced.
I got bombs thrown into my house. I got people came here, ransacked my computer. And I got people threatening me. I got this and that, but I'm safe.
And what it reveals about the freedoms Hong Kong no longer enjoys. Listen to Hong Kong's Rebel Billionaire on the Slow Newscast, wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, I just want to come back to this idea of telling the truth versus lying, though, because I think it's fascinating the way that Shiv gets this done by telling the truth. In a way that Rhea, when she comes in and gives her pep talks and says, we have nothing to be guilty about, she just lies, right? The way that she thinks you can change the facts on the ground is by lying to people, and then that doesn't work. And she winds up just being incapable of doing this job that I'm pretty sure she did want at least an episode or two ago.
Yeah,
what makes her change her mind?
I think she just, like she says, she can't see the bottom of the pool. And it's clear that we aren't at the bottom of the pool yet. There's going to be more out. And it honestly seemed like she was just not comfortable with just how dirty this company is. And that she said, like, the details, she didn't realize in the details how dirty the company is. And maybe that she has some kind of, could it be conscience? Or is it that she doesn't want to get on a sinking ship?
I think she just realized that she was being screwed over by being given the job.
She's the one character who I've had trouble with, like her motivations and like the rapidity of her trajectory shifts. I think where I'm like, wait, you wanted this one thing, and then you like believed in Logan. Is that because there was maybe romance, or you wanted the company, or like it's so rapid? Where I was having a hard time with it.
Are you saying it wasn't believable that he would name her his successor at all?
No, I think I think his standpoint was believable. Hers wasn't to me. I was like, wait, sorry, suddenly you're like organizing the party and I don't know. Also, no Marcia in this episode.
And funny. Roman tries to talk to Logan about it.
An episode without Marcia is always going to be a suboptimal episode.
Yeah. I feel like Marcia is, you want to think there's something amazing there, but like we really haven't seen, I know you're going to get mad at me, but have we really seen that much great stuff from Marcia?
Only a little bit. And there's all this mystery packed into her about her mysterious background, and there's all these, you know, blank spaces that we keep waiting to get filled in. Like yeah. They're going to move the plot in some really big way. And I thought that about her. I thought that about Connor's presidential campaign, which we have heard almost nothing about.
Conheads.
Except the conheads.
The conheads.
But can I use that?
The conheads. But the other one who really fascinates me is is Naomi.
Yeah.
In the beginning of the season, she's like the diehard, I will never go anywhere near the Roy family who are evil. And by this episode, she's literally turning up in the halls of Congress to offer moral support.
I mean, sex with Kendall cannot be that great that you're just like, whatever.
So what's going on with Naomi?
I always think something's going on with anybody who does anything.
I think they have a burgeoning relationship. I think their relationship makes total sense. They have similar stories.
They're nihilists,
and they can relate to each other. Yeah, nihilists, exactly. She doesn't actually believe in anything, possibly. I don't know about that.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if I can make that leap.
But
they have affection. They have affection for each other.
And it's clear that Logan, like, despises her.
Yeah, which is going to always be a problem for Kendall. Like, he can never stray from his father's approval that much.
I really thought he was...
Logan despised his airhead girlfriend, and that caused Kendall to just dump the airhead girlfriend. But right. Kendall has something going with Naomi, which is much deeper than he had with the airhead girlfriend.
I feel like with the airhead girlfriend, it was like when someone comes over to your house and you realize, like, how dusty it is. It's like you need someone else's perspective to show you, like, how ridiculous your choice is. But with Naomi, it's kind of a different thing.
I mean, That must be such a rarefied universe to inhabit, not only their sort of uber rich children thing, but like the ones who have had the drug problems and have like caused embarrassment or whatever it is. Like, there's got to be like three people on the planet who get it.
Yeah, and they get each other.
And I thought they had such a connection in the helicopter that he was going to confess to her right there about the car accident. Mm. I really thought that was going to happen there, and I still am holding out some
hope. Well, maybe he already has.
He's desperate to confess.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He really
couldn't tell his mother.
I mean, honestly, she's a better person to confess to than his mom.
Probably anyone is.
He's not going to get that opportunity, I don't think.
And did you notice, like, I think it was in the back room at the hearing, and someone said something about people going overboard and dying. They cut to Kendall. That's on purpose, right? They cut to him to like make you think about that. I've noticed it in a few like little places where that the death thing comes up, overboard comes up, cut to Kendall. So I feel like I really want them to make those two things collide somehow, but that maybe just
information has to come out. Kendall's gonna implode.
Well, that's the rule, right? You can't have a gun in the first act and not blah blah blah. I don't know,
John.
and not blah 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 in the second act, right?
It's something something Chekhov something. talking about information coming out though, another big question I had was that both Logan and Jerry at the top of the episode make reference to the weasel being backed by Sandy, and my question is, do they believe that the weasel is backed by Sandy, or do they just want to say that they think that the weasel is backed by Sandy because that will help them in the proxy fight? And somewhere deep down, they know that he's actually being backed by Ewan.
Are we sure it's Ewan? I know you think so.
I think it's Ewan. Are you not sure it's Ewan?
I think that's a really good theory.
I don't know.
I like it.
I don't think so.
Isn't all of Ewan's money tied up in Roystar stock?
We don't know.
Felix and
he might have sold
last week they said he sold it, and he just has, they said to me, Emily, no, he just has treasury bonds now.
No,
so
you know what?
That's what they told me
last
week.
I noted that last week when you guys talked about that, and I thought, but wait, that's a significant amount of stock. Wouldn't that have raised some alarms? Wouldn't that have caused the price of the stock to drop if somebody had suddenly unloaded that much of it?
Well, not if he'd unloaded it.
Who's saying it was sudden?
Yeah. Right, like if he'd sold.
I see.
Yeah.
I think it's an open question as to who is bankrolling the weasel.
I mean,
but he came to that board meeting.
All right, let me put it.
Attack of conscience?
I mean, who would turn down?
No, someone is bankrolling the weasel.
$20 million? I don't.
Right.
The question is not so much who is bankrolling the weasel, and more if it comes out that Ewan is bankrolling the weasel, would Jerry and Logan be surprised?
Nah, they're not surprised by any fuckery, to use a Succession word, right? I mean, they expect
because
everyone
Logan
to double
cross Logan
them
can see two moves ahead, right? You know, the minute he hears there's a congressional hearing happening, the first thing he does is he grabs Roman and puts him on a plane to Azerbaijan or Scotland or wherever Edward is. He can see where this is going, and he needs to cut it off somehow.
Would being taken private by some murderous Edwards, I don't know where they're from.
Where are they? Yeah.
Would that actually take Would that take the heat off the situation? I mean, I feel like once your reputation takes such a massive hit, like it would if you have the 60-minute segment and, you know, incident, no real person involved, like even if you go private, you're still like a shell.
You get rid of the proxy battle and you get rid of the shareholder concerns.
So you just go on being dickwads and it doesn't matter.
Right. You had the right
metaphor, Emily, earlier when you talked about the phone hacking scandal in the UK, which really, you know, was if you want something as big as this in real life, this was as big as this in real life in the UK. The entire Murdoch edifice in the UK just was, you know, their reputation was completely ruined. Mm-hmm. And yet they managed to sort of sail through it while remaining public until very recently. So I think that, if you manage to avoid all public disclosures and accountability by getting bought out by some Middle Eastern potentate, then that can only help, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
And you have the wrong soccer team.
Hibs. Hearts.
Hibs. Hearts. Go there.
Hearts. Go Hearts.
Hibs. Whatever. Go you. What is it? You something bastard?
He says, go you lovely bastards.
Really proud to be associated with you guys. Well, what the fuck can I tell you that you don't already know? You got all this, guys. Don't worry about it. Because you guys are a team. And when a team is a team, it can't actually physically be beaten. It's impossible. So go hard, go fast, go, you lovely bastards.
Go, you lovely bastards.
Fucking know what the fuck am I supposed to say?
Always there with the pep talk is Roman.
I just love the three of them going on their little trip together. Just a dipshit, a sex pest, and a grand old Duke of Dork on a Central Asian vacation.
Which one is the sex pest?
Roman must be the sex pest.
Which one is the sex pest?
The one Roman's in the back. Duke of Dork is Laird.
It's Roman.
Roman's a sex pest.
I don't know.
Roman's the sex pest.
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe he's referring to himself with all three.
It's really just Roman alone, and those are just apparition characters with him.
Well, seriously, I mean, at the end when they're like, Roman Roy, can you come with us? And he stands up and walks, and then his two, you know...
Jamie and Carl are just like, whatever, dude.
Jamie and Carl follow him.
Yeah, they're with him. There's entourage.
Jamie and Carl, they're just like, well, we're Roman, so we walk with him.
Proves it.
One thing I wanted to just note is the scenes this season with Shiv walking places. That's a thing, right?
Yeah, it is a thing. It's a lot of striding.
She's always striding and walking with purpose, yeah. Like this time through the...
And walking down those stairs, in the middle of the stairs, just like staring straight ahead as she's going off to Gil's office.
Yeah, no one else walks like Shiv in this series.
So one thought I had watching this as someone who covered Congress for like 6 years was they actually did a pretty good job of getting what it feels like to be in a hearing, right? And also, more importantly, the interiors of Congress. Like they shot in the Hart Building, or... at least, if not the actual building, a very, very good facsimile of the Hart Building, which is the newest of the Senate office buildings, named after Phil Hart, former senator from Michigan, who was an incredible man. And that, to me, I don't know. It's just they're good at it. There are often things that are set in fake Washington where you're like, no, 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 that's not the State Department. The State Department is actually a super ugly building. Like, that ornate thing that you have decided is a building is just wrong. Like, this actually felt pretty good.
I did take issue with the lighting.
You did take issue with the lighting.
Because those hearings are always bathed in flat fluorescent light, and this was very theatrical, the lighting.
Well, I'm glad for that, I think.
Director.
Yeah.
This is a director.
This is why we have
He notices here. These things.
So Lizzie, when Shiv is striding down the
Yeah, that was a made-up
stairs,
building,
in the middle of the stairs to go off to Gil's office, that's a made-up building.
That's a total made-up building.
Tell me about the visuals there. Like, is this is like the most power exec that we've... And she's been pretty power exec the whole season, right?
Right,
and
then her like trench coat blazer dress thing. Yeah.
No turtleneck this
time. It was
kind
of amazing.
No turtleneck, no Catherine Hepburn pants. Like, this was... Yeah. Yeah.
In the last episode, she had that backless turtleneck, right?
Right.
And yes. I recommend that there's a piece in the cut, I think, about all of Shiv's turtlenecks, which I would recommend. We could put in the show notes this.
Fun to read. I need to read that.
Because they've definitely been a thing this season.
Yeah.
Which I think
I had a lot of quibbles with Shiv's clothes in the previous season. And yet I think I was informed on this podcast that Elizabeth Murdoch was kind of like a random sloppy dresser for a while. So
yeah, I think we
thank
first
you
see
whoever
Shiv
said that
in the first season. We first see Shiv and she's wearing what's the name of that like poncho she's got on?
Yeah, this like big sweater.
Oh, terrible!
Thing,
like you'd see
awful.
Like a Grateful Dead parking
yeah,
lot
totally.
Or something.
Yeah. Anyway,
I think
now,
there was talk as well about how like the pilot episode of the first season had a relatively limited budget, and then once they started getting the HBO money, then.
Then it was like, let's put her in some Max Mara.
They bought clothes.
She's like a Max Mara girl.
And there was something about how she took her shoes off on the playground when she was talking to Victim Lady. That
such
was
a good move.
It was the perfect thing to do. And they have a moment together. I hate these shoes.
Being a woman, let me take off my shoes. Convince you to shut up.
That was kind of her job, really. Mm-hmm. It was once again like the lady, what did she call it? Like the lady shit work or something, she says to Rhea. Yeah, it was once again kind of the female card being used to really not serve any female.
Speaking of Rhea.
Soft skills, lady duty, shift,
yes,
shit work.
Thank you. Yes.
Speaking of Rhea, yet another scene of Logan like screaming after a woman, like desperately kind of going after Rhea the same way he went after Nan Pierce.
Throwing himself at the car window.
Yeah. Funge me.
Another one of my lines.
I'm sorry. This always happens.
All right, John, what's your favorite line?
Well, there went another one.
You're going to take mine, aren't you?
I'm going to try to go with one that that I don't think anyone's mentioned yet, which was a Frank line. Are you now or have you ever been a member of the crew's dirty fuck party?
Dirty sex fuck party.
I'm sorry, dirty sex fuck party. I was typing dirty as fast as I could.
I mean, that's just the best, like, bringing in McCarthyism and all. Yeah. Oh, damn it, honey. That was my line. I also have What's It Like to Be Married to a Man with Two Assholes, which someone said about Tom to Shiv. Was it?
That was Victor Hugo, Hugo, the PR guy.
Victor Hugo.
That was Victor Hugo.
It was Victor Hugo, yeah.
Sorry.
Fisher Stevens as Victor Hugo.
Next week, the Succession musical. Why not?
Emily?
Everyone's taken the good ones, but...
Oh, I have some good ones in my pocket. That's why I'm letting you go.
Thank you for calling on me first. I really appreciate
it. I believe
that.
It was Frank. I think it was Frank who said, if I was to give Tom a letter grade, I'd give him a B plus for bad plus terrible. I enjoyed that.
Mine, I loved Jerry's line to Tom where she goes, can you stop angsting? You're angsting me. But... The one which stuck with me was and this was super smart the way they did it. They were right next to each other in the way that it was cut between the subplot and the main plot. That you had Edward telling Roman, quote, it's an administrative action function when he was trying to explain what the, you know, terrorist situation was and hostage situation. And then like 1 minute later, we are in the Senate and Tom goes, Senator, I use a variety of target-oriented incentives to enhance optimal performance.
He gets everyone laughing in the room, too, which is rare, I think.
Human footstool?
Human footstool is a target-oriented incentive.
I'll just leave it there.
I've written down, it's not fun to think you might find a corpse in the freezer, Bluebeard, which I guess someone said to Logan?
That was Rhea saying.
That was Rhea.
She was like, she just married the bachelor and she's rearranging his furniture and then finds a corpse.
I feel like I'm your prophylactic. A rubber you slipped on so I can protect you.
Rhea, that was not the idea.
I can see I fulfill a useful role at this point. A more respectable flavor. Secure votes from shaky shareholders.
You're good. A new broom. You're golden.
It's fun to be the new bride. Rearranging the bachelor's apartment, putting flowers out. It's just not nice to think you might find a corpse in the freezer, you know, Bluebeard?
Yeah, I mean, I always think of Bluebeard's castle as being like a Bartok opera, but I think it predates that.
I'm not sure what
the corpse in the freezer reference is to.
I also
but it's definitely
think of
to
it
Bluebeard's
as a
castle
opera.
Somehow. Well, what do you think Bluebeard's castle is?
I don't know. I thought of a pirate. I don't. I'm very basic.
I thought she was just calling him.
No,
old.
I think Bluebeard is like an Eastern European king who had all manner of
amazing,
I guess, corpses in his freezer.
I want to live in your brain.
You don't
want to
keep them in
minutes.
The fridge. You want to keep your corpses in the freezer, not the fridge. I think is obvious to all.
I mean,
of
unless
us.
You're going to eat it in the next five days.
Exactly.
Don't keep them in the sauna.
In Iceland or whatever.
Oh boy.
Give them the silica mud treatment.
Did you guys catch when Logan's trying to explain to Rhea the history of just, again, fuckery at Waystar Royco, and he says something to her that's like, did you ever have an editor who put his hand up your sweater? And it was like, what are you talking about? We're talking about like women going overboard on cruise ships. And he's like, did anyone ever touch you inappropriately? Come now. That's all this is.
I
was kind of
watching that.
I
was like,
that.
Huh, that describes actually several people I've worked for and places I've worked. But yeah,
she just kind
but
of.
But I guess the implication there is that Rhea once upon a time was a journalist.
Oh, yeah. That's what I thought, too, that she came up that
if
way.
If she hadn't edited, that means that she was a journalist.
No, that confused me for a second.
And if she was a journalist, that means she was a journalist who then became CEO. And that is another reference not only to the Bancrofts, but also to the Murdochs, right? Because Dow Jones was run by, what was his name, Peter Gann, something like that, who the CEO of Dow Jones was a former journalist. And of course, the CEO of News Corp is Robert Thompson, who's also a former journalist.
You know, it's funny. I didn't actually take it that way. I thought it was like, didn't you have a former editor? Like, wasn't there some Pierce former editor who must have done that? But I think you all are probably correct.
I think both.
Yeah.
Also, her little inspirational lying speech, I feel like, was extremely accurate to the way that business people tend to talk.
Oh, to specifically to news people?
To news. Yeah, like whenever I've been at any company and there's been layoffs or whatever, you always get that like very cheery, don't worry kind of speech. And I was just thinking how this undermines every speech I'll ever hear again and every speech I've heard in the past.
Is anyone here watching The Loudest Voice? Because I started watching it. I didn't get very far, but there was lots of inspirational lying speeches by Russell Crowe playing Roger Ailes. And yeah, I wonder. I don't know. I feel maybe I've just been in the wrong news organizations, but I've never encountered an inspirational speech from anyone.
Or maybe I was thinking more of like the reassuring speech after something bad happens where you're told everything's going to be okay.
I've definitely been on the receiving end of those.
Yeah, I've never been reassured by one of those.
Really, Felix?
Oh,
you're missing out.
Maybe I'm just too
cynical. You've never been reassured or you've never had one of those like land weirdly on you? I've definitely gotten speeches from executives where I'm like, that's terrible. We're all screwed.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so how do you think it landed with that little baby speech that Rhea gives where she's like, we've got nothing to feel guilty about? Do you think that was the right, correct, and successful piece of inspirational rhetoric? Or do you think everyone just looked at her and rolled their eyes?
I think they took it as like, that's the line we're going to take. Because like when they're watching the 60 Minutes episode, they can barely watch it. First of all, they can't stop talking over it. And
they can't stop saying like, it's bad, it's really bad, it's really, really bad.
Yeah,
and
but then also being Rhea like, this is nothing.
And says, no, it's fine.
Yeah, but while they're watching, this is nothing. Like, this guy's a liar and he doesn't know anything.
Nobody's reassured. Nobody's reassured. I mean, that's what the end of the episode is that Logan is convinced he has to do something very drastic.
What's it going
to
be?
Because ultimately the shareholders are going to vote. They're going to want Sandy and Stewie to take over rather than keep the Logan family in charge. And they're more dangerous than Gil or the Senate.
Yeah, definitely.
Also, I should ask you this, John. Why is there someone named Gil and someone named Gilliard? Why would you do that as a writer? It's very confusing.
I can't explain it.
Okay. It upset me.
Although I am curious about, since you mentioned names, I'm curious that the name McClintock appears in Succession and Veep. It's Lester's last name, we said. It's also Mike McClintock, the bumbling press secretary in Veep. I don't know, some poor McClintock in the Iannucci orbit who's being trolled in both shows.
I bet there's something there. I feel like there are those writers who use...
David Simon does that. He had an editor he did not like and named a character in The Wire who he did not like that particular last name.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
As you do. Okay, so let's wrap this one up.
Toodlepip.
You guys are all convinced that it's I want to know what's happening in episode 10 in the grand finale, because, you know, season one, the final episode was jaw on the floor stuff. Can season two final episode live up to that?
What was season one's final episode? Was that the wedding?
That was Kendall's manslaughter.
It was, wrapping
the
up.
Wedding, it was the wedding and the Chappaquiddick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the Chappaquiddick, exactly.
Oh, man.
Are we going to be late with the finale? We should tell people that.
Yeah, so don't expect Slate Money Succession to come out on Monday morning, because we're going to see it on Sunday night along with the rest of you. We will come into the studio, record it on Monday morning, and then we will rush it out as quick as the amazing Jessamine Molly can get it all done. But we will have a recap of the final episode, and all I want for Christmas is for season 2 episode 10 to be half as good as season 1 episode, the final episode, because that was an amazing episode.
I'm really sad there's only one more. I'm like genuinely troubled.
There's going to be another season, though.
I think that next episode is going to be absolutely packed. there's the.
But there will be a blood sacrifice. That we have been promised a blood sacrifice.
Yes.
I want.
Yes.
I want blood.
We all thought Kendall, is that too obvious? I don't know.
I think it is Kendall.
I think it's Kendall.
But
he's going to give the order for somebody to shoot Roman.
Or literally, Roman will be dead, and that will be the blood sacrifice.
It's actually.
That sounds awful.
That
Logan organized the whole hostage situation.
The arc of season two is Roman. You know, we haven't heard anything about the exploding rocket, basically, in season two.
It was some
thumbs.
That
was fine.
There was a couple of things at the beginning, and then it got forgotten. And now,
who needs them?
And now Roman is being set up as the person to somehow save the day. I don't know, that would be a bit weird if that.
Maybe he'll get.
It's still gonna be Shiv.
Maybe he'll get a minor injury, like a bullet will graze him or something. We need a hospital scene.
And like make him grow up?
Sure.
Hal becomes Henry V moment. I doubt it.
Do we think that that Tom and Greg are going to jail?
No, because Greg could sell out Tom and avoid jail that way.
He could. I feel like Greg is weaselly enough that he's holding on to that, maybe not to go to the feds, but maybe
to
bring it to Logan and be like, pay me.
Because he doesn't want to be the world's poorest rich person. Right. He's still got those two pieces of paper in his pants. He's going to whip them out.
They're still there. They've been there. That's terrible.
He's going to open up his pants and whip out his piece of paper.
His two pieces of paper.
Logan would be so unimpressed by that. Can anyone explain why Greg made the decision that he made and gave up his $250 million
really
for the sake of working for Logan?
Because he's dumb?
I think that's it. He's genuinely shocked
to
learn that.
He's over his head.
When they tell him $5 million is like not enough money, he's genuinely shocked to learn that, but seems to believe it at the same time.
Yeah.
I think he's dumb is a good answer. Lizzie's got
He's got that kind of like Dr. Evil, like blank look in his face. What, you mean $1 million isn't $1 million?
Logan
That's
flattered
the worst
him.
Amount of money, apparently.
Logan flattered him pretty recently, and I think he's easily...
He didn't flatter him very much.
No, but I think it was enough for Greg. I think it was enough for Greg.
Like, all of these people, I'm just like, take the money and walk. It's toxic. It's terrible. Just walk.
That's what Kendall told Naomi.
Yes.
And she did it, and she does seem better now.
Right. She was at the...
Well, she didn't get the money in the end.
Oh, that's
still,
true.
Pierce is still under family control.
You're correct.
Greg may be dumb, but he's ambitious. So I think it's
just
him.
Like Tom.
That's
just like Tom.
It. I think, John, you've nailed it there. Like this is the only way that he can ever have any vague semblance of professional success in his life, because he's clearly completely incompetent. He needs to do it via nepotism. And so he decides to take that route.
Well, let's see what happens.
I mean, that's
pitching
why he's been sticking around
the
whole
wagon
time
of Tom
anyway.
Tom Wamscans. Okay, so...
Can I just say one thing? Because before I came on this podcast, I always said that if I was on this podcast, I would just want to say my parents made a contribution to the wine.
Great Wamscams lines of Succession. I mean, that's a deep cut there, Lizzie.
Thank you.
That's all the way from season one. So, Lizzie, thank you for making a contribution to the wine, which was a great line. John, thank you for coming on. It was awesome to have someone who actually understands how these things are structured. And
if you say
Jessamine,
so.
Molly, thank you for producing this. Many thanks to all of you. Many thanks to Emily. And we will be back next week with the grand finale of Slate Money Succession.
That was so much
Bong.
Fun.
Bing, bing,
bing. Are we supposed to sing the
theme
song?
Can we add that?
Me singing bong, clink.
Bong, clink.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.